Good morning to Alex Maselli, longtime golf columnist, entrepreneur. You can read Alex's work on sigolf.com. Hey, welcome to the show, Alex.
Thanks, Annie.
Hey, remember the days not too long ago when there was one PGA Tour and all the top players were competing against each other week in and week out for the most part. Those were the days, right?
Yeah, it seems so long ago, and yet it doesn't seem that long ago. You know, it's kind of interesting because we had a lot of tours out there before. I mean, the Asian Tour, the European Tour, DP World Tour. You know, there were a lot of different tours out there, but now LIV seems to be something that's taken hold to a large extent. I mean, it's not even a year old. I mean, people, when you think about that part of it, it isn't even a year old. And look what the disruption it's caused in less than a year. So give it 3, 5, 7 years if it goes that long. Most people question that. But if it does go that long, you know, what will it mean to the PGA Tour? And where will players move back and forth? There's a lot of conversation and discussion. Obviously, there's a lot of legal issues involved. But the bottom line is that this tour is less than a year old, and it has created an immense amount of disruption.
What are your overall impressions with this battle between PGA Tour versus LIV Golf, you know, in addition to just this disruption that it has caused?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, the legal issues that are out there are just a waste of time and money. I mean, the only people getting rich off of this deal are the attorneys. The tour should step back, just like should step back and say, look, there's no reason for us to do this because there's no winner in this. There really isn't. So let's stop that. Let's focus on our own tours. Let's make our own tours as good as we can make them. And then down the road, maybe there's some place we can discuss it. But I think right now it's just a waste of time and money for both sides. And they're not getting anything out of it. The PIF is probably into this much deeper, meaning the private investment fund of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They're into this much more than they wanted to be from a legal standpoint. The money was the money. But to be forced to legally have to start disclosing things that they don't want to disclose, if it gets to that point, they're like, you know what, let's back up. We don't really want, this is not what we wanted. This is not what we signed up for.
And it looks like the suit won't even go to trial until June 2024, if then. And it's just a huge money drain for both sides. But, you know, they have unlimited funds, the Saudis.
Right. Yeah. But the problem with unlimited funds is that not that they're going to run out, but the fact is they're going to have to do certain things that money can't stop them from doing. I mean, they can't buy their way out of if they have to disclose information and they don't want to disclose it. At some point, there's an end route from the legal standpoint. So right now, they're at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California. And if the Ninth Circuit decides to actually take this case on, that means that the trial will not happen in June 2024. This trial may not happen until June 2026. So that means that thing is still sitting out there. At the same time, if they go all the way through with this appeal and they lose, then they're stuck with having to disclose information which they don't want to disclose. And people have to realize it's not just disclosing information for this particular case. It means it's sitting there as precedent for future cases. And the PIF does not want that to be the case.
All right, let's talk about LIV golfers as it applies to getting into the major championships. Do you feel that they should be able to compete in all the majors, Alex, if they otherwise qualify under each major's criteria?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the difference between the PGA Tour that has 40-something events a year, or the DP World Tour, and the majors have one event a year. So they have to make that event the best event possible. I think Augusta National understood that. They're like, look, we do not want 15 guys that everybody knows their names not to be able to participate in our event because of what? Because they decided to go to another tour? I mean, if they had decided to go to the DP World Tour last year, would that mean the Masters would say, oh, we're going to throw our hands up and say, no, 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 or the Asian Tour or the South American Tour, whatever it is? The answer is no. So if you're the PGA of America or the USGA or the RNA, you want to have the best field possible. You do not want to have the disruption and the discussion during the early week of your tournament talking about why you didn't let X, Y, or Z in. I mean, look at what happened just now with Taylor Gooch winning in what I thought was impressive fashion, at least for two rounds in Australia. I mean, how could you keep that guy, a guy who actually made your tournament, you know, how could you keep him out, or why would you want to keep him out? And I think that's the question. So, you know, let everybody compete. That's what the whole is all about. Let them compete, and the best person will win. At least that's in theory, that's what's going to happen.
Well, with Taylor Gooch, I know he got invited to play in the PGA Championship by the PGA of America, but there was some kind of technicality in the language. The USGA changed its wording to say that those players who qualified and were eligible for the season ending tour championship could get in, were eligible. Well, he couldn't play because obviously LIV players are not eligible to compete in PGA Tour events. So now he has to be, what, in the top 60 in the official world golf rankings to get into the US Open. And he's, what, 59 right now. So let's see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, why? You know, I mean, the USGA is great at making rules with wording that makes it difficult to understand to begin with. This is pretty clear that they were trying to make sure that someone like Taylor Gooch didn't get in. And the question is, why? I mean, why are you doing that? Why are you jumping on the bandwagon like that? Why would you be thinking that that made sense? And so that's a question that Mike Wann needs to answer.
Phil Mickelson said this week, Alex, that the majors must create avenues for the LIV players. And if the world golf rankings are not inclusive, the majors will find another way. He said it will all iron out because it's in the best interest of everybody to have the best players. How do you react to his statement?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. It is to the benefit of those tour, or those tournaments, rather, to have the best players. I mean, there's no question about that. How it's going to iron itself out, that's more difficult. I mean, even if the official world golf rankings somehow give points to LIV players for LIV events, you know, will that be enough? Because, I mean, quite honestly, looking at the way the system could work, you could easily give guys points for playing in LIV events, but they just would be so minuscule compared to what the, you know, get on playing the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour, that it really wouldn't work. It wouldn't matter anyways. And so that doesn't make much sense. You know, people don't understand the world rankings were developed way back in the day by IMG for one reason, and one reason only, so that the majors could understand who the best players were out there, so they could either invite them or let them in. And eventually it evolved into what we have today. So, I mean, the majors are the reason why the world rankings was started, and they need to get a better foothold on what's going on with their world rankings. Because, again, if you look at somebody like Taylor Gooch, if you look at somebody like Phil Mickelson, I mean, nobody saw Brooks Koepka playing as well as he did at the Masters. These guys are not just, you know, has-beens now. They are playing very good golf against very good fields. You can't just ignore them. And that's what we're talking about, ignoring the best players in the world.
Let's talk about the Ryder Cup. And do you think the LIV players will be allowed to play in the upcoming Ryder Cup, which will be in Italy, end of September, early October?
Yeah, I think, will they be allowed to play? Yes. Will they be on the team? Neither the U.S. or the European team is going to be able to get, a LIV player will not get enough points to be able to get on the team by points. And now with only six guys getting on by points, it's a pretty small group. So that means the other six guys have to be selected on each side. And then you have to think about it. I mean, if you're Zach Johnson, is that what you want to do? If you're Luke Donald, is that what you want to do? And talking to both captains, their discussion was really, you know, if the guy's the best 12, then what I have to do is I have to go back to my guys and I have to say, look, is this going to be a problem for you? Is this going to be a disruption for you? Is this going to be an issue for you? And you can see where, you know, somebody like Dustin Johnson on the American team wouldn't be a problem or a disruption. Someone like Patrick Reed on the American team may be a problem or a disruption. So those are things that they'd have to figure out. The likelihood is, I think, on the U.S. side, that there's going to be a LIV player on the team is probably not very good unless one of them wins a major. On the European side, I think the odds are better because the European team has been, I would say, somewhat decimated more comparatively than the U.S. has with LIV. So it's a possibility that Luke Donald will have to look at some of those guys that have left. But the question is who do you look at? I mean, he loves Sergio Garcia, but is Sergio Garcia, you know, one of the guys that you think is playing well enough to actually make his team? So that's the thing. You have to find who it is that he would be looking at. Henrik Stenson's playing better, but Ian Poulter, but, you know, Lee Westwood, no. I mean, there's just a lot of good guys that have been Ryder Cuppers for years. But are they past their expiration date is the question.
It'll be interesting to see if Zach Johnson, the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, will be inclined to maybe stay away from the non-PGA Tour players, just because maybe he's a PGA Tour guy.
You know, I would have thought that to begin with, but I think if someone stood out with no question, I mean, let's just say that Brooks Koepka, who played very well, obviously, at the Masters, and turns around and wins the PGA Championship, and turns around and wins the U.S. Open. Well, I mean, if you're Zach Johnson, you have to say, well, I can't just ignore a guy that just won two major championships and finished in the top five in the third one. So I think at that point, you have to say to yourself, you know, what's best for my team? And I think that's the difference. It's not what's best for my tour. It's what's best for my team. And the team would weigh in and say it would be pretty hard not to pick a Brooks Koepka.
Right. I mean, the animosity really does not seem to be amongst the players from both sides. It's really amongst the heads of each organization. Don't you agree?
And the media. I think we're both the media and the governing bodies are involved in this, or the tours. Yeah, I mean, there's people are picking sides, but you're right. The players generally, you know, like look down at, let's take Jupiter. You know, there's 30 or 40 probably PGA Tour pros or professional golfers down there. Some of those guys that are down there are live guys, and they play with their tour counterparts when they're home. I mean, it's not like they don't see each other. It's not like that Dustin Johnson doesn't play with Zach Johnson sometimes, or Gary Woodlum doesn't play with Brooks Koepka. I mean, it happens. And, you know, they all get this. They all get what's going on. And they're all reaping huge financial benefits of what's going on. So why would they complain?
That's right. But they're still, based on all these lawsuits, you know, intense animosity between both sides. So we'll have to see how long. Maybe both sides would just drop the suits after they, you know, drain their pockets eventually. But I'm going to be talking to the LPGA commissioner, Alex, in the next segment, Molly Marco Samal. How do you view the LIV Golf issue and the LPGA?
Well, if the LPGA is smart, they would have learned from what has happened with the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. They would have seen that actually spending time, sitting down, talking would probably be the best thing for the LPGA. And, you know, right now through the Aramco series, the Saudis already have a foothold in women's golf. So the question is, can the commissioner of the LPGA make the tournaments better? Can she make it better for her players? Without giving up, I mean, it's a negotiation, without giving up control of your own tour. And I think the answer is probably yes. So now she has to sit down and figure out how the best way to do that. And I think that's the question. You know, how open are you to sitting down with Aramco, which is a corporation, or, you know, the Saudi government, whoever it is you have to sit down with? You know, how open are you to sitting down with them, and how open are you to making a deal? And that's what it comes down to.
Well, I know the commissioner said on my show a year ago that she is definitely willing to sit down and talk. So she did say that. We'll find out if she's had any conversations. But I can't imagine LIV. I just don't see LIV wanting. Maybe they would want to work together, but they seem like they really want to dominate and really take over. In which case, that would not be a good thing.
Yeah, I know. Well, first of all, when they first started this, they didn't want to take over. And I'm not sure there are options in proposals that they had where they would be taking over. So I'm not going to say that they don't have that in the back of their mind. But I think in regards to the LPGA, first of all, running a tour is not that much fun. I don't know if they really want to delve into that. I think LIV is learning what running a tour is like, and it's not as easy as everybody thinks it is, no matter how much money you have. So I think if you're the LPGA, you want to sit there and figure out, okay, let's sit down and figure out the best, what's our number, what are our five top things, what are your five top things on your side? Let's figure out how we can meld them together. And I would almost venture to say that the LPGA would walk away with this, with still running their own tour. They would just have a benefactor to some extent, and someone that's going to have, you know, some involvement in their tour. They're going to be on their board and so forth and so on. But at the end of the day, I think they'd still be running their own tour. And what happens then? And I don't know if it's Liv per se. It could be a separate entity. I wouldn't suggest it is Liv. I would say it would be a separate entity that somehow is created from the Saudi side. So, you know, there's a lot going on with that whole situation. But the bottom line is that can this make it better for the LPGA player individually who struggles out there? Because I mean, the purses aren't what they should be. The difficulty of what they have to deal with travel, the way the system is set up, where they probably don't have this, you know, they don't have the same things that the men have. So let's figure out a way to make it better for my players. And if I can do that, then I'm doing my job.
Alex Maselli, thank you so much. I love your insight. And hey, I know you're out in LA ready to play Media Day for the US Open. Enjoy and look forward to having you on again in the future.
Thanks, Annie.
Thanks so much.